Hi, it's Patrick here, and we have a South Africa pod today. As the world observes the passing of Nelson Mandela, what did the end of apartheid do for the languages of South Africa? You may have heard a pod that I put out a few months ago on this subject. It was a wonderful BBC documentary reported by linguist Mark Turin. We're going to excerpt a bit of that here. And then after that, consider the health of one of South Africa's languages. In fact, the most widely spoken, Zulu, and how one guy has taken it upon himself to update and upgrade the language. But first, here's Big Show host Marco Werman.
World leaders are on their way to Soweto, South Africa, for tomorrow's memorial for Nelson Mandela. Nearly 100 heads of state will be there, including Barack Obama. Joining him will be former presidents Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, and George W. Bush. Soweto is South Africa's best-known township and the scene of many of the most famous episodes in the struggle against apartheid. One of those episodes concerned language, the language that classes would be taught in schools. In 1976, school children in Soweto rioted in protest against the Afrikaans language. Very few black South Africans spoke Afrikaans at home. It was the language of the white Afrikaners who ruled South Africa. Yet in schools in Soweto and elsewhere, kids were taught in Afrikaans.
This is where I was born. This is where I grew up.
The BBC's Milton Nkosi is from Soweto, and his high school was right across the street from Nelson Mandela's old home.
A lot has changed and a lot hasn't changed. I remember, you see this square here. We used to play chess here. But the children in their curriculum, they now learn languages without having to learn Afrikaans.
When South Africa went through its momentous changes in the 1990s, the issue of language was one of its greatest challenges. Afrikaans was a symbol of identity for the white Afrikaners. The language had come into being in the 17th century when Dutch settlers arrived in Africa. During apartheid, Afrikaans was one of South Africa's two official languages. The other was English. After apartheid, and after Nelson Mandela was elected president, debate began over what a new constitution should say about languages. Afrikaans was despised by many, loved by a few, says constitutional lawyer and one-time ANC dissident Albie Sachs.
Language for the Afrikaner nationalists had been central to their identity, their being, their struggle, and they could just about imagine conceding democracy and could just about imagine a constitution in which black and white were equal. But if Afrikaans was downgraded, boom.
It would have been popular to strip Afrikaans and even English of their status as official languages. But the framers of South Africa's new constitution, including Albie Sachs, knew they had to strike a different kind of balance.
No language rights already existing in South Africa should be diminished, which meant the status of English and Afrikaans would not be reduced. But the language rights of the great majority of the people who'd been marginalized, their rights had to be upgraded. And in two sentences, we had solved the basic dilemma of the language question in South Africa. No language is more important than any other language.
That's an ideal, of course, but it's an ideal that two decades later, some South Africans have taken to heart.
My name is Phumza Fihlani. Our little girl is 8 months old. We're very conscious of having her learn Xhosa, Zulu, and then English. So when I get home, if I'm reading a story to her, I'll read an English story to her, and then Daddy will read a Xhosa story to her. But we're very conscious of having her exposed to those three languages at this point.
Once South Africa's youngest generation grows up, though, they'll find that all languages are not equal. It's one thing to enshrine equality in a constitution, another one to enforce it in the workplace, for example, or schools. Listen to this middle-class South African parent.
There's a huge controversy in South Africa among educated classes of black people where everybody finds themselves in this difficulty where their children are speaking English to them because they send them to good schools, and the good schools invariably are English-speaking schools, and so they have to talk in English with their children. And suddenly, you drive half an hour down the motorway to where the parent grew up, and they greet the kid in an African language, and the kid speaks like a total stranger. Daddy, what are they saying? And a lot of that is so painful because the people at the parents' home, the relatives and the friends, they resent that.
And there are other resentments. Native Afrikaans and English speakers are resented for not learning indigenous languages, even at the most elementary level. And by the way, because Afrikaans is still one of South Africa's 11 official languages, Afrikaans can be the language of instruction at some schools. These schools generally appeal to Afrikaners, not blacks, and they can look like throwbacks to the apartheid era. Critics say that communities that don't want to integrate hide behind the official status of the Afrikaans language. These arguments are a measure of how languages can both knit people together and divide them.
Okay, now on to Zulu, and this is an interesting one. Zulu isn't, on the face of it, an endangered language. Millions of people use it as their mother tongue, but that doesn't mean that Zulu will always be around, especially because in certain areas, technology, even numerals, it's not really keeping up with the times. Enter one man with a linguistic mission. Here's a report from the BBC's Andrew Harding.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I've come to a bookshop in the centre of Johannesburg, and there's literature here from all over the world, but every book, as far as I can tell, is in English. There is nothing here in Zulu, which is the language spoken in more South African homes than any other.
There's nothing for recreational reading and so on and so forth. So for me, that's part of the disease that I would like to see cured.
Piwe Nkosi Mwiyazi calls himself a language activist, and he's trying to save Zulu, one of several South African languages that seem to be struggling, lacking the vocabulary to keep up with the modern world. Piwe's solution is to invent new words.
More than 450 words. For example, talking about the internet, I could easily just say e-internet. And that's what most people do. You just put in an E before the word and Bob's your uncle.
So what have you come up with for, say, the internet?
For the internet, ulwebu, which is the word that we already have for web.
Yes.
So that means 22 cents per share.
Yes. 600.
English rules the roost these days in South African classrooms. But for most children here, it's a second language, which often leaves them at a disadvantage.
What school told me, without really saying it, was that your mother tongue is not important enough.
To make matters worse, indigenous languages like Zulu can be unhelpfully complicated when it comes to basic things like numbers.
I got to a place where I thought, well, I've got to revamp this and come up with a totally new numbering system.
Because my sons are learning Zulu at school, and I know 7, 8, 9, these are very long words
exactly.
For short numbers.
Exactly. 8 in Zulu, it's isishiyagalombili, which is 8 syllables. So you're sitting there watching somebody read the news, and it just so happens that the exchange rate of the rand with the dollar is, let's just say, 8 rand 89. What are you going to say? It's amarandi ayishakalombili namashumi ayishakalombili neshakalolunye samasent. I mean, by the time you said all that in English, they're already talking about oil and God knows what else. I decided I had to do something about that.
So what's 8 now in your version?
In my version now, 8 is spore.
People are always talking about languages dying out every day. Another one disappears from the earth. Do you worry that that could happen to Zulu?
I absolutely do worry about it. Look, it's fine if we all come to an agreement that globalization is just far too strong. Other languages are already up and running. We haven't even started crawling. It's game over. We're winding down the clock on our languages. But why I feel very uncomfortable is that that is exactly what is happening, but we're not aware that that is what is happening.
So we've had political liberation here. We talk about economic liberation. You want linguistic liberation.
Absolutely.
But does the South African public share Piwe's concerns? I've come to a shopping mall to find out.
English simplifies everything.
So if I asked you to say 88 in Zulu now?
Yeah. I can't.
It's tricky.
It's tricky.
So you would just say it in English?
Yeah, I would just say it in English.
And is that okay, or do you feel somehow that's a shame?
Yeah, I think it's okay.
Does that mean Zulu is dying?
No, it's not dying at all. It's not dying. It will be there.
I do worry because now English is perceived as like the language that
everyone can understand. And it also, like, us not speaking much Zulu is a threat because we're losing touch of our culture as well.
When I'm angry in Zulu.
Yeah,
English goes away.
And do you dream in Zulu or you dream in English?
I dream in Zulu, obviously.
But Piwe is undeterred, a wordsmith on a mission to save a language. What's your favourite word that you've created?
Oh, my goodness. They're all important. That's the whole problem. And in fact, I would like to be sitting down, coming up with 10,000 more, because that is what it's going to take.
What a guy. Like a one-man Zulu language academy. That report, by the way, was from the BBC's Andrew Harding. We have more online at the World in Words Facebook page, and I'm on Twitter under the name Patrick Cox. That's P-A-T-R-I-C-O-X. More soon.